Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, what's going on? Are you staying warm? Negative 55 degrees with wind chill. I know you had to trek out for Bulls Outsiders yesterday. Did you make it home safe, obviously, being here today for the podcast?
Yeah, man. It wasn't too bad. Took a ride. Did not make the trek to the blue line because they offered to get us to and from the studio. So I said, all right, well, why not? But honestly, man, like, you know, this will be over in another day. It's Chicago in January. I don't know why people are getting all bent out of shape about it.
For our listeners who don't live here in Chicago, like, we get it. Like, we can survive the negative 15 degree weather like once in a while or like usually during these bad winter months, but like negative 55, come on, man. I can't do this. And then it's supposed to be 55 degrees here like this weekend. Like, this is just dumb.
Yeah, so that's what I say. It's almost over, and we're going to be back to summer winter weather in just a couple of days.
Well, the Bulls were in Miami last night, and that stadium was just brokenly empty. Like, over the last month or so, the United Center has been surprisingly more empty and empty, and I was actually a little bit more surprised that stadium was pretty empty last night. But Dwayne Wade didn't play, and this last dance tour.
That's the only thing that people in Miami care about now. Their team sucks. They have a farewell tour for Dwayne Wade. Good for them. Heat fans are terrible. They don't care about basketball. As soon as LeBron left, everybody stopped caring.
This last dance tour that they're having for Dwayne Wade, and the fact that he didn't play last night, I know that either was he hurt last night or was it...
I'm so over Dwayne Wade. This retirement tour is a joke. Hall of Famer. I'm not arguing anything about Dwayne Wade being a Hall of Famer, but you know how I feel about him. I'm still very bitter about that stupid season, the three alpha season that set this franchise back. They should have been rebuilding then. And you know what you can do? You can have a Hall of Fame NBA career without putting all this attention on yourself. Look at Tim Duncan's final season in the NBA. Look at what Dirk is doing right now with what might be his final season. Dude's not going around, you know, demanding attention and waving and, oh my God, let's do a jersey swap everywhere I go. Like, D-Wade, get over yourself, man.
And I saw he wasn't playing. I would have been super mad. You know, what he did with the Benny the Bull jersey swap, I would have been so pissed off about that.
It's just a joke. What a joke.
But anyway, today's show, we didn't get to all the voicemails, the text messages that we wanted to get to on yesterday's show. We broke down like half hour of Brooklyn's game because the Bulls played halfway decently. So we wanted to spend a decent amount of time. We're going to spend probably about 15-ish minutes here on this Miami game because, you know, it wasn't that impressive. They did pull off a win, a sizable win last night in Miami, but it was more weird than good. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll get to the rest of your voicemails, kind of clear out the queue of text messages that you guys have dropped for us over the last week or so. You can always do that, though. 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. All right, Matt, let's start it off. Miami, this Heat team, they should look in the mirror. They should be embarrassed because, look, Zach LaVine didn't play last night, dealing with a sore ankle, sore knee. He tried to test it out right before the game started, and it was like, okay, he's not going to go, which is good on him. I don't want him going out there against Miami and screwing something up. Like, This has been a season of injuries. Don't go out there and hurt yourself because you're trying to push an all-star ballot, you know, a selection for the all-star game to prove something, you know?
That's not happening. And it's not happening. So what's the point? It's like I was also upset that after really not playing much in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden with like 3 minutes to go, Boylan puts Markkanen in there and the Bulls are like up 16. And I'm saying, like, what the hell are you doing, man? Not only did it make perfect sense to not risk Zach LaVine playing, because guess what? It don't matter. Like, what was Jim Boylan doing throwing Markkanen out there late in the fourth quarter of a game that the Bulls had under wraps? I swear to God, man, Jim Boylan sometimes just makes me scratch my head. But as far as LaVine goes, yeah, obviously there's no point in risking injury. He's already had a couple of nicks and bruises this season, and there's no point taking that chance. The thing that, of course, everyone wants to talk about, and Jordan, I'm curious what you think about this, is that the Bulls, yes, the Heat are struggling right now, but the Bulls went on the road and beat a team that is currently, what, seventh in the East at 24-25, so like hovering around 500, beat the Heat in Miami fairly handily, as you said, without Zach LaVine. And a lot of the LaVine haters and LaVine doubters saying, like, look at the way that this Bulls team performed last night without Zach LaVine, and they're gumming up the works and making the ball stick. Now, some of that I think is valid, and some of it I think is blown out of proportion. Like you said to me, oh, well, that means the Bulls are now, what, 4-2 under Boylan without LaVine? I don't know if I'm putting a whole lot of stock into that, because, like, I mean, come on, who are those four wins against? The Cavs? This bad Heat team, the Cavs again, and the Cavs. Like, I don't know. That's just my guess. But I don't think that there's a whole lot of stock in that. What about you?
All right. So, yeah, you're right. So, I did mention this to you right before we jumped on to record. So, the Bulls are 4-2 with Zach LaVine off the floor under Jim Boylan. Those four wins come against San Antonio on December 15th.
Okay, so that one's real.
Remember, that was when Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen came down in that fourth quarter, closed the game pretty nicely. The other win came against Orlando on the 21st of December.
Yeah,
the other one came against Cleveland. Zach LaVine, again, inactive, so you were right about the Cleveland win. And then, again, in Miami last night. So, Orlando, you got embarrassed against Orlando, like, a week later. So, San Antonio has had their own struggles. Like, didn't you just hear Greg Popovich, like, the other night end a press conference after 30 seconds saying that was, like, one of the most embarrassing losses we've had all season? Miami, like you had just said, they need to look in the mirror and say, wow, we're just a complete embarrassment. We lost to one of the laughing stocks in the NBA. They're going nowhere, and I can't even believe they're the seventh seed in the East. So,
yeah, with the highest payroll in the league and a bunch of nobodies.
I think the more important question is, taking Zach LaVine off the floor, I think it's made me realize, and this isn't some like brain buster of a conclusion to come to, but him and Chris Dunn can't play together. It's more of a conclusion than ever, right? It's just him and Chris Dunn cannot play together. And if Zach LaVine wants to be a focal point of the starting unit, the dude's got to learn how to play off the ball. Like, against Brooklyn, Matt, I go back to this. There was a stretch of about 2.5 minutes where Zach LaVine was the cause of a run where he came down, turned over the ball. They went straight back. Brooklyn knocked down a three where He left Joe Harris wide open for a three. They came back on the other side. Zach LaVine tried to drive it all the way to the basket. He missed pretty badly at the rim. They went back on the other side to Brooklyn. Brooklyn had an easy layup. Like, it just, I'm watching Zach LaVine, it almost like we said all season long, he's trying to do too much. And I don't know if that comes with the fact that Zach LaVine feels like he can't trust anybody else to knock down or do anything else on this roster, but Zach's got to trust other guys. And maybe that just comes with time, but watching him off the floor and this team start to pick up a few more wins and these younger guys willing to trust each other, that's kind of a problem too. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? Like 4-2 with him off the floor is kind of weird.
I don't know how much of it is LaVine with this weird, you know, tendency we've seen as far as the Bulls getting some wins when LaVine is out. I think people, as I said, are blowing it out of proportion. I think there's something to it. I think there is something to the fact that LaVine has shown at times, many times this season, that he is not great making decisions. His basketball IQ is in question right now, and he doesn't necessarily help his teammates make the offense flow better. LaVine is very much a one-on-one kind of player. He is a very good one-on-one player, and he can score from all over the floor, and it is valuable to have him. What we need is a way to figure out how to optimize LaVine as a dominant scorer in this league and build a team that functions around that well. Because, you know, as you were saying, LaVine needs the ball. Guess what? So does Chris Dunn, because Chris Dunn can't play off the ball. And I think Chris Dunn is just as much of a problem about this as Zach LaVine is. And as far as last night's game being another instance of, oh, look, the Bulls got a win when LaVine wasn't playing. Okay, well, they also got, like, the performance of a lifetime from Bobby Portis, who up until last night has ghosted his way through this season. I mean, he finished with, what, like 26 off the bench and completely took over and dominated in the third going into the fourth quarter. Nobody on that Miami team could stop Bobby Portis. Okay, so that coincided with LaVine not being on the floor. Cool. They also got a 20-8 game from Wayne Selden, who, like, you know, just arrived on a bus from Memphis a couple weeks ago. So don't tell me that this was all about LaVine not playing and, oh, the Bulls can't win with LaVine. The Bulls are winning when they don't have LaVine on the floor. There's no coincidence there. I understand the narrative that those people are working from, and there is some credence to the weaknesses of LaVine's game that they are citing. But don't tell me it's why the Bulls won that game last night. Don't tell me that.
I agree with you. Like, look, the Miami Heat are not a great team. Over the last 10 games, just look at the stats. The Miami Heat offensive rating 105.6. That puts them at 24th in the league. Their defensive rating over the last 10 games, they're slotted at 108.8. Okay, that puts them at a top 10 defense in the league over the last 10 games. Not bad. So, okay, fine. But still, like, a net rating of a negative 3.2, that slots them at number 22 overall in the NBA. That's still bottom third in the league. So, not that great. And last night, they laid a goose egg against a Bulls team on a back-to-back traveling. Like, the Miami Heat should have been able to win this one against the Bulls without their number one scorer. Like, this is more of an indictment on the Miami Heat than it is to praise a Bulls team. And good for the Bulls. Like, good for these guys to come out and actually care for an instance. And like you said, like, a wild performance from Bobby Portis, who actually showed up. Wayne Selden, who had, you know, a performance of a lifetime. And every minute that guy plays, man, I'm saying to myself, you know, there might be something there. And I'm not saying that he has to be, he's not going to be a cornerstone of this team, but he's showing it, like, build games one after another. And that's what you need. Yeah. And you found value. You're finding value the more minutes
honestly,
he plays.
I don't know, like, where he stands in the Bulls' list of offseason priorities, but you got to imagine that the Bulls execs are thinking a little harder about no longer seeing Selden as just a cast off loner who came here because of the picks and the deal from Memphis, but a guy that they might actually consider re-signing. Because, I mean, you look at guys who can play that kind of, you know, combo shooting guard, small forward position, and that's been Denzel Valentine and a whole lot of nothing for this team over the last couple of years at that position. And Valentine's sitting there in a giant boot right now, and people have plenty of questions about his future on this team and in the NBA, as injury-prone as he has been. And guess what? I think Selden is a little bit more versatile on the offensive end than Denzel Valentine is. So they got to at least seriously consider giving Selden a modest offer of some kind to stick around next season. And I know this isn't going to be a popular opinion, but we talk about the mistakes that this front office has made this year, last year, over the last 10 years. And we talk about how campaign is the butt of a joke, and that trade sending away Doug and Taj and a pick was god awful, and oh my gosh, how the hell did they make that trade? You got to give the Bulls some credit for this one, man. You have to. I know we always hate giving these guys even the tiniest ounce of credit, but when they deserved a pat on the back to say, hey, nice move, that was a nice trade, guess what? They would have won that trade if it were Seldon for Holiday straight up at this point. Look at what Holiday has done with that Memphis team. Awful. But a bunch of zeros in his stat line last night against the Timberwolves. Seldon looks like a player. Seldon looks like a guy that might actually be worth keeping. And they got 2 second-round picks out of the deal. You got to give him props for that.
I tweeted out yesterday, I refuse to hear any Justin Holiday slander from any Bulls fan, because regardless of his play, regardless of it, man, the dude brought us 2 second-round picks and Wayne Seldon to get a look at. I don't care about his play. I don't care. The dude brought us 2 assets in a rebuild and Wayne Seldon to take a look at for 40 games.
The slander that we can put on Holiday right now is that apparently his absence is giving Boylan some kind of BS excuse for the Bulls' weak defensive performance since he left. Come on, Jim. Really?
I can't even believe that he thinks that it's like replacing LeBron.
Really,
man.
Jim?
Yeah, oh, my God.
No, I'm sorry.
Here's Justin Holiday's stats since being with the Memphis Grizzlies. In 14 games, he's played 26.3 minutes per game. He's shooting 29% from the field on an average of 7.1 shots per game. He's shooting 23.5% from three, averaging 6.2 points per game, 3.1 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.1 steals.
Cool.
Not great.
Thanks for the memories, Justin.
Yeah. But, like I said, what I was telling people before, Wayne Seldon doesn't have to turn out to be anything. You're getting a good look at a young guy. That just reminded me of a Tommy Boy reference, but I won't go there.
I can get a good look at a T-bone.
You can get a good look
at my head up a Bulls ass. But I'd rather take the butcher's word for it.
I'd rather take a butcher's word for it.
Hey, I tell you what. You can take a good look at a butcher's ass by sticking your head up there, but wouldn't you rather take his word for it?
What?
I'm failing to make the connection here, son.
No, I mean, you can get a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a butcher's ass, but then, no, it's got to be your bull.
Wow.
Here's the deal. If I want you...
You have derailed.
Shut up, Richard.
Boy, I'm really at a loss for words here.
Forget it. I quit. I can't do this anymore, man. My head's about to explode. My whole life sucks. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. My dad just died. We just killed Bambi. I'm out here getting my ass kicked, and every time I drive down the road, I want to jerk the wheel into a goddamn bridge embankment.
Man, but yeah, Justin Holiday, the dude brought us 2 second-round picks and a look at Wayne Seldon, so that is what I appreciated, because otherwise you're letting Justin Holiday walk for nothing. But that's what I care about. So if the draft started today, that second-round pick would be number 36. So just think about that. That's all I got from this Miami game, man. Bobby Portis had 26 points, 10 of 17 shooting, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, 3 turnovers. Even with all of that, though, the defense still wasn't great because he was only a +5 in the +-minus. So, Wayne Seldon, though, in the starting lineup was a +19. So he does play good defense, too.
Bravo to him. And before we move on from the Heat, how about a shout-out for Brandon Sampson? Sampson! Getting his first minutes in a Bulls jersey,
and not Jakar Sampson either. Not the one Levine dunked on yesterday.
Not that one, and not the drug kingpin from Half Baked.
Yeah,
different Sampson.
I don't have anything else really. Chris Dunn. I mean, this was the best performance we've seen from Chris Dunn in a month, right? 14 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, I think it was his, 2 steals?
His 17 assist game against the Pacers was less than a month ago, I think.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think, what was that, the 4th or the 2nd of January?
Yeah, it was early January.
So, okay, yeah, you're right. But yeah, 14 points for Chris Dunn last night, 6 of 14 shooting, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and only 3 turnovers, and he was a plus 8 in the plus minus. So that's just another thing, too, is like that builds your case about us saying LaVine and Dunn together on the floor. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Yeah, that's all I got, though. Lauri Markkanen, 14 points, 13 rebounds, 4 of 15 shooting, 0 for 5 from 3. Had a rough night from the 3-point line, but he's still a plus 21 in the plus minus, so that was nice to see. But yeah, rough night shooting for Lowry. All I got to say is somebody should have swapped jerseys with the Heat mascot after this one. Somebody should have just done it. I don't care who it was. Oh, somebody did swap jerseys, though, or did at least give their jersey. Shaq Harrison. Who? Quick notes. Shaq Harrison's brother plays in the Miami Marlins system. And after the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Good story, though. Two brothers who are both in professional sports. Shaq Harrison's brother plays in the Miami Marlins system. Shaq, obviously, here with the Chicago Bulls. Cool kind of story, though. So kind of cool to see. That video was shared viral on Twitter. So if you guys want to go see that, that's out there. But cool little story to see.
You know what would be cooler? If Shaq Harrison could shoot better than 30%?
Man, come on.
What?
Boo this man!
You gotta always... Why you gotta ruin, a 30-second little positive note that I had for you.
Recently, man. There's no denying that.
I know, but what I was telling people to is,
toughness. This is,
okay.
Spirit.
What we were saying before, and somebody else said this too, when I was talking about Wayne Seldon for a second. Wayne Seldon could be something, and he could be nothing, you know? The ride of David Nwaba last year, that was the thrill of everybody, right? And now we look at him in Cleveland, and that is just not so great, right?
Well, I mean, that Cleveland team in its entirety is a, you know, disaster.
It could have been different if he would have stayed here, but that's hindsight, so whatever. But what I'm saying is, somebody brought it up to me on Twitter yesterday, is like, oh, people were saying Shaq Harrison was good for 2 weeks. And I kind of wanted to correct them, and I said, no. I said, Shaq Harrison going from being cut and going, you know, bouncing around the G League, going from being cut from the Suns and being signed to the Bulls from a non-guaranteed contract to having his contract guaranteed is good for his goals. But, you know, nobody was saying that he was quote-unquote good. Like, he was better than what we had. He was better than Blakeney, and he was better than Cam, which is an indictment on both of those guys.
Right. I think when we started to see Shaq minutes compared to campaign and after Archie's little hot streak disappeared fairly quickly, we were like, all right, well, and Blakeney, who's just like, all right, well, I got 5 minutes of run off the bench. I'm going to shoot 25 times, and we'll see what happens. Compared to the other guys he was competing for minutes with, then yes, okay. We said, hey, Shaq Harrison, not terrible. Throw him out there. See what happens. That's over. We know who Shaq Harrison is. We know what Antonio or what Blakeney is. We know what Archie Diacono is. At this point, there's no more of the fun mystery behind those guys who Bulls fans were looking at and saying, like, who the hell is this guy? We know who they are now. And we don't need to dedicate any more minutes to figuring out Shaq Harrison and Archie Diacono. Heck, I wouldn't mind seeing some more minutes from Samson just to see. Raleigh Alkins got this guy in a two-way contract. The Bulls are tanking anyway. Throw him out there. See what you got. We've barely seen any Raleigh Alkins this season. We know who those other guys are. Let's maybe give ourselves and give the Bulls a chance to see who these other guys are.
I can tell you right now why we're not seeing Raleigh Alkins. Because he hasn't been very good in the G League, man. I watched a few games and I've looked at his stats and he hasn't been very good. That's flat out why he hasn't played.
So, like struggling to break shooting 30% from the field this month, not good?
Like,
because that's what
like,
Jack Harrison
like
has been
struggling
doing.
Struggling in the G League. Struggling. So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, just throw him out there. Sure. Let's see what he's got. But it hasn't been good in the G League, like against
okay,
G League talent.
But he is also playing around G League talent. And, you know, insert Bulls fans joke saying, well, if they promoted him to the real squad, he'd still be playing around G League talent. But that is a funny joke, but not necessarily true. Maybe Riley Alkins plays better and looks like a better role player if he's playing with Markkanen, Levine, you know, whoever else, Bobby, Jabari.
Yeah, former Arizona teammate, too. Maybe there's some chemistry, some spark there.
Never
so.
Know.
I agree. It doesn't hurt. Throw them out there. Doesn't hurt. All right, let's get to some text messages, some voicemails. Always drop those for us at 331-979-1369. All right, so first voicemail of the episode comes from Cole.
What's going on, guys? It's Cole from the 217. Shout out to the whole Locked On Nation, Matt Peck, and Jordan Mally, of course. And anyway, so Anthony Davis, he's available. Not really for us. So how about we actually think of things think of free agents that we're actually willing or maybe willing to come to Chicago. One I'm really high on possibly coming if we don't end up getting AD, which is like a 0.1% chance that we do get him, is Thon Maker. Thon Maker is currently unhappy with the Bucks organization right now and is trying to get out of Milwaukee. I think Thon Maker would be excellent with us. You know, he's exactly what the kind of player we're looking for. I mean, our front court is kind of stocky already, but I mean, in this day and age in the NBA, you have to have a variety of players if you want to be a good team. So, how about it, Thon Maker to the Bulls? Go Bulls!
All right, Matt. We discussed this a little bit a couple days ago, I think. Thon Maker, you know, this is, I think this is just Thon being frustrated with his positioning with the Bucks. Obviously, the Bucks are really good. I don't know why he would want to leave there, but I can understand it from a young player's perspective. Is like, you want to play, and if you want to extend your life in the NBA, you got to find playing time and exposure. I like the idea of it if it doesn't cost you all that much, but the Bucks have already said that they want to keep him and try to develop him, but... thoughts.
I don't get it. What are we talking about? Thon Maker as some great difference maker? The whole notion these days that you don't worry about fit, you just acquire talent and then figure out fit later. That's kind of what Paxson told us when they signed Jabari. There's some truth to that when the player you're talking about, or you know, the draft prospect you're talking about is a all-star caliber, franchise-changing potential kind of player. Thon Maker ain't it. When you're talking about building out the other pieces of a roster around the star caliber players where, all right, we've got stars, let's see how they fit and then figure out the fit around them, Thon Maker is never going to be anything more than a role player in this league. That is my opinion right now. Thon Maker, not a world changer, not a franchise changer, a role player. And guess what? As far as fit, those are the players where fit is important. So to me, I'm looking at this Bulls team and assuming, no, we do not, in fact, trade away the farm for Anthony Davis, because that's very unlikely to happen, and we do continue to build around a core that includes both Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., then why the hell do we need Thon Maker?
Like I told you, you're going to get rid of Robin Lopez more than likely before the deadline's over, right? So you have your options of either continuing to play Bobby Portis at the center position. That's not really working, right? You have the idea of playing Felicio big minutes to see what you have in him. I don't think anybody wants to see that.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
So if the Bucks are going to trade him and you have a week to decide...
Felicio's parents don't even want to see that.
All right. I mean, this is the same thing as like taking a flyer on Noah Vonleh last year, right? Like, if that's what it's... Is it, though?
I mean, you're saying, you know, the Bucks drafted this kid, and now they just kind of have to stash him because they're a contending team. They don't really have a place for him in their rotation right now. He's like, playing 11 per game this season. Not a whole lot going on. But, I mean, what You're worried about our backup center right now, Jordan?
No,
this team has so many more pressing matters.
No. I'm not worried about that. But Matt, we're in a position right now of acquiring talent acquisition, right? We're not even in a spot of figuring out positions and depth and all of that. You just got to acquire talent.
But Jordan, that's what I was just saying. That's the line they used on us with Jabari. Whatever. I mean, you know, Jabari was a former number
two
pick.
Who was buying that? Who was buying that? You weren't?
No, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. Oh, it's about acquiring talent and then worry about fit later. But, like, to me, that is, oh, well, Zion doesn't really fit with what we have on our roster right now. Who the hell cares you draft Zion Williamson? You get Anthony Davis. Who the hell cares about fit? Thon Maker is not a franchise-changing talent. So in that sense,
I understand that.
So then why do we care about Thon Maker?
I understand that. It goes beyond Thon Maker, Matt. We're in talent acquisition mode at this point. He's even beyond him though. Okay, so over the last few days,
using talent very fast and loose, talking about Thon Maker right now.
It doesn't even matter about Thon Maker. Over the last couple of days, you have told me no to Lonzo Ball. You've told me no to Thon Maker. Two guys who you can acquire for basically no risk and cost you nothing at this point.
That is not true about Lonzo.
Who do you want?
And look, of
you're going to get him for what, Chris Dunn in a second round pick? You've told me that basically, and a lot of Bulls fans have told me now that Chris Dunn is basically not going to fit here on this roster.
What's that have to do with anything?
Right. If Thon Maker's not going to cost you $20 million like Jabari did, so that comparison doesn't make any sense.
But do you think the Bucks are just going to let him go for nothing?
I'm asking you now. Thon Maker thing for a second. Listen to me. Forget that for a second. Who do you want? Who do you want right now that we're going to evaluate either at the deadline or this summer in talent acquisition mode, which the Bulls should be in still, to evaluate?
Look, okay.
I don't understand because it's all no's right now. And I don't understand because that's not a solution. Well, none of this is a solution.
Well, Lonzo to me was like a hard no. It was close. And look, I'm open to the idea because I do think he's a solid playmaker with great core vision. And he might be better than anything we've had at point guard since Derrick Rose exploded. That might be true. I just was pointing out the fact that, guess what? This Bulls team has had a rotation of point guards who can't shoot, and Lonzo Ball would be another one of those. So for the love of God, I would like it if they could find a point guard out there somewhere who has solid court vision, a high basketball IQ, can make plays for his teammates like Markin and Levine, and can actually make a defense respect him behind a three-point line because most of the contending teams in the NBA right now need that. That's all I said about Lonzo. It wasn't like, oh, God, hell no, Lonzo's awful. I'm just saying he's saying he has to start? What are you talking about? Lonzo is saying that if he's to get traded away from the Lakers, he would rather go to a team that doesn't already have a starting point guard in place, a.k.a. the Pelicans and Jrue Holiday. That's why he wants to come here, because he sees at least a potential window to compete for the starting point guard spot, because Chris Dunn doesn't look that great right now.
Okay, think about it this way, though. If you do get Lonzo, say you do trade for him this summer, what happens if you do go out and get a point guard that can shoot and you can sign somebody like that? Not even saying that you have to sign an all-star point guard. A point guard that can start and can shoot.
What do you mean, what happens? I will be happier than I am now if the Bulls get a point guard who can shoot and make plays for his teammates. What's the point of your question?
But I don't think you're thinking past the fact that if the Bulls were to acquire Lonzo Ball, that automatically, just because he can't shoot, doesn't mean he can't fit on this roster. Like, I agreed with the fact
I didn't say that. I said I would prefer a point guard who can shoot, and Lonzo can't really shoot threes that well. That's all I said, man.
But, okay, back to our main point is here. Talent acquisition mode and how much it's going to cost you should be what we're evaluating here. And I think that's what Cole is trying to say here, is if if the Bucks are saying, all right, fine, Thon wants out, fine. And it's not going to cost you that much. And I don't know if Thon's a restricted free agent this year coming into free agency or whatever. And it's not going to cost you that much. Or you can trade for him at the deadline and the Bucks, all they want is whatever. Match the salary in a second round pick or whatever. To pick up the phone and ask about it, you should do that. You've got to find depth everywhere and evaluate talent everywhere. It's not about just finding your starters and your stars, but it's finding talent all over the place too. That was my main point here.
Okay.
You know, we're also caught up.
Finish your thought.
I was just going to say, we're also caught up on this idea that every player that we get has to turn out to be a superstar. Not every NBA team thinks like that, and you shouldn't think like that.
Well,
you don't get anywhere thinking like that.
I think Bulls fans are fair in saying, we don't even know if we have a star right now, so we should maybe worry about building some stars before worrying about role players like Thon frickin' Maker.
That's fair. That is fair.
To your point about Thon, and you know, it won't cost that much, matching contracts, whatever, Thon is making $2.7 million this season, or actually closer to $2.8. He's on the books for $3.5 million next season, and then a qualifying offer of $4.8 in 2020-21. So, you know, wouldn't break the bank to get him. Could match salaries fairly easily if the Bulls wanted to go out and make a Thon Maker trade before the deadline. But I don't see that happening, and I don't feel like it's something that the Bulls should be prioritizing right now. I get that you're saying we need depth everywhere. You know where we really don't need depth and have plenty of people? And I know you're saying, oh, well, Rolo's leaving. Bobby, they may decide to let him walk, whatever. So maybe the front court's not as deep as we think it is. I don't care. Because guess what? We still have Markkanen and Wendell. That is the one part of this roster, the starting five of this roster, that we all could maybe agree right now is in place to move forward. Wendell and Markkanen, everything else right now is a giant friggin' question mark. Chris Dunn, not looking great. Zach LaVine, we've got our issues with LaVine. Fine. But, you know, front court looks like it's figured out, at least more so than anything else. So before you talk to me about, oh, we really need to pick up the phone and go get Thon Maker, how about a wing? How about, as I was saying, a point guard who can shoot? For the love of God, why are we talking about Thon Maker?
Matt, it goes beyond Thon Maker. That's just a name. I'm talking about in general, taking a flyer on guys that teams have given up on.
Taking a flyer on talent. Talent acquisition, fine, whatever.
Guys who need a restart.
I'm addressing the question at hand. The question was, should we go get Thon Maker? My opinion? No. Who the fuck cares about Thon Maker?
Thon Maker's not leaving Milwaukee. How about we just end it there? The Bucks aren't giving up Thon Maker. There we go. Let's end it there. Let's stop. Thanks for the call, Cole.
Great.
All right, next voicemail comes from Tommy. Tommy from Indiana.
Hey, guys. Tommy from Indiana. Wanted to drop you a quick voicemail. Since Anthony Davis has requested a trade, I feel like the kind of everyone's target for Anthony Davis is kind of going the wrong direction. I kind of feel like maybe everyone's looking and saying, we should go after Anthony Davis. Oh, we could put together this great trade package for him. But I kind of think that's the wrong direction to go. Clearly, he doesn't want to come here and play for Chicago. And after he said he wanted a trade, it sounded like Drew Holiday, the best Holiday brother, was upset. It sounded like he did not want to be in New Orleans after AD was gone, because apparently he said something along the lines of the only reason he signed his max contract was for to stay with Anthony Davis, blah blah blah. Would that be someone we should target, looking for a good point guard who can score and play on the defensive end? Maybe package Jabari if we tried to do something before the deadline. Someone like Jabari, Chris Dunn, and some other assets to try and go after him, just to add a good scoring, good defensive point guard to help Zach and Lowry going forward. Thanks for listening.
All right, we got some updates on Anthony Davis, Matt, from last night. Oddly enough, the Pelicans are doing some very petty things, and do you blame them at all for this? One, the Pelicans changed their Twitter picture from their header on Twitter. We used to be Anthony Davis, and they flipped it now to Jrue Holiday. They also changed the video that they usually play at the beginning of games. They cut out Anthony Davis from that video. Anthony Davis has also been out.
Awesome.
It is. It's very petty and totally NBA drama filled. Anthony Davis hasn't been playing either. He's been out with soreness and an injury, and it's been very weird. The Pelicans are being very petty about all of this. And also, there's been reports that Dell Demps is not taking any calls from the Lakers or from Rob Pelinka. And this is all coming from insiders from Woj and all the insiders around the NBA.
They also released a statement saying, hey, NBA guys, make sure that the Lakers don't try to tamper with us. They didn't say the Lakers, but they said, please keep an eye out for tampering. Clearly, there was a giant finger pointed at the Lakers in what happened. They fine Anthony Davis $50,000, but everybody's making jokes about how LeBron's going to cover that fine, because we all know that this is just LeBron and Rich Paul thinking that they run and own the entire NBA, which sadly is kind of true. And the Lakers, this was just a power grab. This was their scheme to get AD before the trade deadline, as opposed to trying to battle out other competitors for AD services this spring, which I think is what's going to end up happening. As far as the Pelicans cutting AD out of their video, I love it. It is just peak pettiness. But, hey, he told them to fuck off, so they're allowed to tell him to fuck off. Like, you know, it cuts both ways, man. They want to cut him out and move forward without him. It's their right to do that. It's kind of awkward that it's happening before he's actually been traded, but I love it. It is NBA drama at its finest. Back to Tommy's call, though, about, well, if the Pelicans are going to start over, maybe they make Jrue Holiday available. He is certainly a quality, you know, borderline all-star caliber point guard. Point guard, shooting guard, but certainly can play the point in the NBA. Would be a solid veteran for this Bulls team. What do you think about trying to get Jrue Holiday?
I don't mind it, but there's got to be plans after this, though. You know, if you're going to spend this amount of money, because he's going to cost you're going to be spending a lot in the salary cap on him. And,
yep.
Like, what's the plan after
him?
So,
here's his contract. Next season, if the Bulls were to, like, say, like, let's go get Jrue Holiday before this deadline, which would, you know, be shocking to me, but just hypothetically, he's making just over 25 mil this season. Hello, Jabari Parker. 26 million next season, 25.4 the season after that, and then a player option that he will almost certainly pick up for the 21-22 season at 26.2 million. A lot of money, and in those seasons, he will be 29, 30, and 31 years of age. So to me, with Jrue Holiday, I agree with Tommy. You know, he's a solid two-way guard in this league. He could be a solid veteran leader for this team. You know, insert joke about leadership committee here, you know, replacing his brother Holiday on the leadership committee. He doesn't really line up timeline-wise with this Bulls rebuild and the age of the rest of the talent on this team. The Bulls are like the youngest team in the league, second youngest team in the league. And this, to me, Jordan, is actually, you might be surprised, I think I'd rather have Lonzo than Jrue Holiday, based on what the Bulls are working with right now. Because adding a 30-year-old Jrue Holiday does not suddenly turn the Bulls into contenders next season. We're talking about trying to build a roster that's contending, in my opinion, like 4 or 5 years from now, three at the earliest. And so to me, paying Jrue Holiday $25 million in seasons where you're still going to be a sub-500 ball club doesn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah, and calling him a solid two-way guard is a stretch. It really is. Like, looking at his defensive box plus minus numbers. The dude's a career negative 0.1 defensive box plus minus player. He's a career 1.4 offensive box plus minus player. Like, that's not a solid two-way player. Also, too, for the last two seasons, according to Basketball Reference, he's categorized as a shooting guard. Also, think about this, too. You know the name Monty Williams? He's been floated out there for the last 4 months by a lot of people here in Chicago is the next guy that the Bulls should hire as head coach. If you bring him in, he didn't do anything to help develop Drew Holiday with the Pelicans. Like, that's the last guy that I think would want to have Monty Williams as his head coach. Not saying that, like, all of that has to add up. But anyway, also too, Matt, you know, you just talked about how you want a point guard who can shoot threes. The last three seasons,
yeah, his three-point shooting has fallen off. It's like, what, 33% this season? 33% last season?
2016-2017, yeah. 35.6%. Last season, 33.7%. This year, 33.2%. Yep. All of that averaging about 4.5 attempts per right. game.
Which, as he's taken more over the course of his career, his percentages has gone down. Because you look at, like, some of his better three-point shooting seasons was earlier in his career when he was taking two and a half threes a game and knocking them down around 39%. Now, he's, as you said, he's taking over just over five threes a game, and he's only hitting them at 33%. So, not great there.
So, yeah, he's a good passer, too, though. Like, he's averaging eight assists a game this year. So, good passer, doesn't turn the ball over a whole ton. So that would be a good plus.
Which, you know, is nice compared to Chris Dunn's zero assists and six turnovers.
Right, but do you want to be spending, like you had mentioned, like $25 to $28 million a season for like the next 2 years when you're just meddling right now?
I do not. Right. I do not. I'd rather see where the Lonzo Ball experiment goes, honestly.
Agreed. So I would say let's hold off on that. Let's hold off on Drew Holiday. Good player, but Let's hold off on a guy that doesn't really play point guard, and I don't think the Pelicans would get rid of him, and if they're going to trade him, they're looking for picks. We said this yesterday. They're looking for picks. The other thing, too, while we're on the Anthony Davis thing for a second, you know, you had mentioned just now that the Pelicans are trying to basically block out the Lakers, you know, box them out and make sure nobody talks to them, block them out completely, cut Anthony Davis out from pretty much everything, shunned him. Has this made you feel at all that it's more likely that he gets dealt to now a different team out of pettiness and spite before the deadline? Or do you think they're going to make the smart play and just leave him on the roster and make him suffer to the end of the season and make the smart move and get Boston in play at the offseason and, you know, maximize their leverage and see what Boston can offer? Or are they just going to be so petty and stupid and just deal them and get it over with before the deadline on the 7th next week?
I mean, the team that can give...
What's your feeling?
The team that can give them the best offer if they are eager to trade him now is the Lakers. A team that's willing and eager to get him now is the Lakers. And they can package, you know, some combination of Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart, Ingram, and a pick or future picks, whatever. But they don't have the hypothetical down the road number one pick that is Zion Williamson that the Bulls might have, that the Knicks might have. If you are to fast forward these talks or stall these talks, I should say, until leading up to draft night this spring. So, as far as the whole being petty, we don't want to send him to the Lakers thing. If the Pelicans don't want to send him to the Lakers, they don't have to. Right now, the Lakers are probably going to make the best offer that they hear. But they don't have to trade AD, and I would, if I'm the Pelicans, I'm going to wait. And I'm going to hear what exactly the offer is from the Celtics, who, by the way, we also heard yesterday, have told the Pelicans, hang on, don't trade AD. Everybody's on the table except Kyrie. Everybody. We can talk Tatum, we can talk Brown, we can talk Rozier, we can talk Smart, we can talk all these guys. They're all on the table. Only untouchable is Kyrie. So let's talk this spring. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm waiting to hear all of those offers.
Right, and Boston has to wait. Like, the explanation here is Boston has to wait until, because of the Derrick Rose rule, they can't trade for two number one picks. They've got to wait.
They can't trade for two guys on the Derrick Rose contract, the max contract.
Right, exactly.
Who, you know, signed that contract because somewhere in their first four seasons in the league, they were MVP, All-NBA, whatever those qualifiers are. So Kyrie, they traded for and is on that contract. AD is also on that contract, so they can't trade for him without getting rid of Kyrie. Or this summer, Kyrie becomes a free agent. He's on a different contract, and then he and AD can be on. And then they can acquire AD via trade. So to me, like that, to me, if I don't want to, you know, if I'm petty and don't want to give AD what he wants and send him to the Lakers, and I don't want to send him to another Western Conference team, and I have interesting hypothetical offers on the table from Bulls, Knicks, Celtics, lots of Eastern Conference teams with enticing packages, hell yeah, I'm going to wait. And I'm probably also going to sit AD down and say, sorry, bud, you're done playing this season.
I don't blame the Pelicans, though, for being salty. And I wouldn't put it out of the possibility of going around and listening to other offers before the deadline, though, because, you know, the Bucks could be in play. Like, the Bucks have said everybody's on the table but Giannis. And, like, a team like that for one championship, like, an opportunity for one championship, or, like, a place like Toronto, like, it makes sense. Like, if you can trade for AD and it's a possibility for 1 year or a year and a half, one championship and you end up winning it, it's worth it at that point. So I understand, like, other teams trying to get involved, especially when you've got other stars to build around. So, yeah, certainly it makes it interesting. So, yeah, to get back to Tommy, thanks for calling. But Jrue Holiday just doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Bulls right now. In the cap space, yeah. I would rather see them use the cap space somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, do you want to take a few texts before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this one comes from the 630. Is Wayne Selden better than Justin Holiday? Yes. Next. All right, let's go 708. Hey, guys, I've heard a lot of names when it comes to possible candidates to coach this team, assuming Boylan's gone. But there's one name I haven't heard yet, and I want to ask why. It's Becky Hammon. I feel like she'd be perfect to coach this young Bulls team. I read Pau Gasol's letter to the Players Tribune talking about Hammon, especially the part where he talks about the pick-and-roll drill, which was a great detail of that Pau piece, talking about, you know, Becky teaching Pau, and a respected aging NBA vet, something that he had never learned before, about one of the elements of his game as a big. I keep dreaming of her coaching Lowry and LaVine to play together. If Becky can coach those two, even Wendell, that would make this team a lot scarier, in my opinion. So what I would say is, I don't know who you're talking to or listening to when it comes to being a Bulls fan, but we hear Becky Hammon's name a lot. I don't know about you, Jordan. I certainly hear Becky Hammon's name a lot.
Weekly basis.
Yeah. Because everybody's saying, when's she going to get that opportunity to be the head coach, move up a chair? And for all the jokes going on in Bulls fandom right now about the Greg Popovich coaching tree and what we're dealing with right now, oh my gosh, I would swap Becky Hammon for Jim Boylan.
Realistically, once Greg Popovich is done, I think the best opportunity for her is just to stay in San Antonio. Like, I think that was probably the realistic opportunity for her. Makes sense, yeah. Because they know her. I think it would be comfortable for her. Best opportunity. Greg Popovich could easily implement her into their system. The respect level is at an all-time high for her there. So it makes the most sense to just hand over the keys to her.
And she might prefer.
Yeah, exactly.
That. The Spurs are a very well-run organization, a very respected organization, and they are the organization that gave her a shot to even be an assistant
Absolutely.
Coach in this league. Long before any other teams were doing that. So she might want to say, this is where I belong. And, you know, Pop, I don't know how much time Pop has left, but until Pop decides that he's done, I want to continue to learn and grow as a coach under him. And then hopefully the Spurs, you know, agree that it's my time to shine. So, yeah, I mean, would love it. If somehow Becky Hammon ended up being the head coach of the Bulls, don't think it's going to happen.
Cue the Stranger Things music. I got a conspiracy theory for you, Matt.
Love it.
So I was digging around because everybody's been asking us, you know, who are your guys' ideal coaches to replace Boylan if that's what's going to happen? And, you know, I'm not I'm not an expert on any of this. I'm not an expert on the X's and O's and any of that. And that's why we like to bring in people here who are connected, well-rounded, and know what they're talking about, that are connected in the NBA. But I was digging through Zach LaVine's Twitter followers and was curious. And the only person that struck me that he follows, and he doesn't follow a whole lot of people on Twitter, the only person that is a former head coach, a guy that's trying to get a job opportunity in the NBA right now, the only person he follows on Twitter is one Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse, he won NBA G League Coach of the Year with the Toronto G League team just a few years ago. I know he got an interview with the Detroit Pistons job just last summer. He's been rumored as a guy to get an opportunity somewhere. He's sitting right now on the bench as an assistant in Memphis. So Zach LaVine has talked about wanting to have a conversation with Pax and Gar and Jerry this summer. And if Boylan's out, I would bet $1 million if I had it, or everything I own, to say Zach LaVine's going to have a word in who the next coach is if he's here for the future. Stack would be a guy that would definitely get a conversation in the next, at least get an interview or have an idea of that. So, but the only thing that makes me depressed about it is if Bickerstaff is fired in Memphis after this season, I would assume that Stackhouse would probably be the next guy in line in Memphis. So, but that's my conspiracy theory there, is maybe Stackhouse is the guy that Zach LaVine likes. But I want to know what his connection to Stackhouse is.
I think it would be good of the Bulls to, in their coaching search, assuming that they are going to tell Boylan, hey, thanks, but you're done here. A guy who can build good relationships with Zach LaVine and the other young players on this team. Because we saw Fred was maybe too much of a pushover, and Boylan is too much of a drill sergeant, and that is a history that the Bulls front office has of overcorrecting when it comes to their coaches. This guy didn't work, let's go the other direction. That's what they have done. As long as Paxson has been in power, that is how this team operates as far as their coaching and their coaching changes. So instead of worrying about overcorrecting from Boylan, find I hate to use, you know, terms like young and with it, but somebody who is young and with it, has interesting, exciting, modern ideas about how to coach the young talent that the Bulls have, who can relate to but still command respect from Zach LaVine and his cohorts. Because the middle ground, we got to find it. Fred Hoiberg ain't it. Jim Boylan ain't it. Find somebody, and in my opinion, somebody who has NBA playing experience and coaching experience. I mean, that is a non-zero number of people. Another name I'd throw out there is Sam Cassell, somebody I would consider. I know my buddy Big Dave of Outsiders is really interested in Juwan Howard,
yep,
as a potential name. And then there are some who would say, let's just go get like an elite guy from the college ranks, like, you know, convince Tom Izzo
to
leave MSU
to do with that
finally,
guy.
or Jay Wright or somebody like that, or Boeheim. Like, I would rather have a guy who is on an NBA bench somewhere right now this season and has ideally head coaching experience, but if not, a long resume of assistant coaching experience at the NBA level and has experience as an NBA player who can relate to these guys. Jim Boylan cannot relate to these guys. He tries so hard and got so far, and in the end, it doesn't even matter. But I mean, like last night, it was another episode of Jim Boylan says stuff after a win, you know, road dog this, honor and spirit that.
Boylytics. Boylytics,
you know,
at its best.
You know, talking about Bobby's game, says he loves wearing the Bulls across the chest, loves honoring Bulls across the chest. I'm like, guys, this is a joke. Jim Boylan cannot relate to these players. Let's get somebody who can. I think you're not wrong in that Jerry Stackhouse would be one of those guys. Juwan Howard would be one of those guys. Sam Cassell would be that kind of guy. Get us somebody who can relate to these players. Fred Hoiberg couldn't control him, and Jim Boylan can't relate to him. So find
Bingo.
Somebody in
you
the
hit
middle.
It on the top of the head, Matt. That's what I've said for a long time, is bring me a modern offensive system, but also a guy who can relate to this generation of NBA players. Find somebody who can do that, can control these guys, but also relate to these guys. That's what I want. You know, Monty Williams' name has been thrown out there, but Monty Williams in 5 seasons with the New Orleans Pelicans has 2 playoff wins and a win percentage under 500. Look, he didn't have a whole lot of help either, and he did have Anthony Davis with him, but didn't really develop any of the guys that were there. Eric Gordon didn't develop into a really great player until he was traded. Anthony Davis, yeah, he did develop a little bit, but that's what I'm saying is, like, bring in a guy that has a good resume but also can relate to these players and have a good offensive system. That's what I want. Do your research, please. I don't care what the Bulls do. Just be thorough with your investigation, your interviews, and don't F this one up.
Like I said, actually have a search yes. this time. Let's start with that. All right, let's take one more text, and then let's get out of here. We're coming up on the 1 hour mark. Jeremy from Idaho asks, this is a good one, Jordan. Fast forward to the draft. Let's say Team X has the 6th pick. They call the Bulls and offer the 6th pick for Zach LaVine. Do you say yes? Keep up the great work, guys, and stay warm. Thanks for checking in, Jeremy. Jordan, what do you think about that?
My question is where's the Bulls draft? Where's the Bulls pick at? Is it not number one?
I don't know. Let's play a different hypothetical. So let's say it is number one, and then let's also say it's, you know, 2, 3, or 4.
If the Bulls have number one, I'm saying no. If the Bulls don't have number one and say they've got 2 through 5. I say yes, and I immediately take that, and I go to whoever has the number one pick, and I package whatever they want, minus Lowry, Wendell, and I say, I don't care what you want. I want the number one pick, because I want Zion. I don't care. Do whatever it takes.
Do you think 2 and 6 or 3 and 6 and 4 and 6? Would be enough for whoever has the number one pick to give up Zion? Because I don't.
Then offer more. I don't care.
Well, you just said accept Lowry and Wendell, so how can you offer more?
Then future picks.
Future first?
Then future picks, because he's the only guy in this draft that is a future franchise changer. Even next year's draft, ask any scout. Go read from any scout. They will tell you this year's draft, next year's draft, and the draft after that, the talent is nowhere near compared to the last 3 drafts. You won't find a franchise changer. And if you have come to the reality, like most Bulls fans have, that as long as the front office is still here and you're not getting free agents to come here, top free agents, this is your best shot. Go get Zion and do whatever it takes to do that. I don't care.
I agree with the logic of it. I say it would be hard to come up with a package to get whatever team that has the number one pick to give up Zion. The more and more we see from this kid, the more and more he looks like a generational talent. And
especially
as you said,
Cleveland.
The rest of the draft is poop in comparison.
Right.
So who's giving up that number one pick if they have it?
You're right.
The Bulls wouldn't, obviously. I have a hard time believing that anybody would. The other point I want to make about that question is, how little do you think of Zach LaVine, Jeremy?
Seriously.
Really? The 6th pick in this draft? That's going to be what, like Cam Reddish, maybe? Jarrett Culver? Like, what, Nassir Little? You honestly think that Zach LaVine is worth that little? I think that's insulting to Zach LaVine.
Honestly, it's kind of depressing the way that people have talked about Zach LaVine this year.
Unless he didn't say what he was implying, which is what you were implying, Jordan, which is to the end of assuming the Bulls don't get the number one pick, packaging 6 with 2, 3, 4 to try to get 1, which you and I think agree is unlikely to happen. Because guess what? If the Cavs have the number one pick, they're taking Zion. If the Knicks have the number one pick, oh, you better believe they're taking Zion. Really, you know, anyone with half a brain in this draft with the number one pick is taking Zion.
Yeah, I can't even see any team. Like, Like, if Cleveland was number one, they wouldn't trade out of that. If Phoenix got there,
no.
Maybe.
Phoenix has a track record of doing weird stuff on draft night. Maybe.
Atlanta? No.
Nah, they'd take him.
Yeah.
I mean, like can you said, imagine like you said, the marketing power of Trae Young and Zion together?
Yeah.
They're taking that.
Like New York? Nah. They would definitely take him.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's next question.
Zion's Garden? They would. Knicks fans would go insane. They're if they passed up the opportunity to take Zion, Knicks fans would riot in the streets and burn MSG to the ground.
And not only would you have to trade you have to trade Zach LaVine for the sixth pick, but you would also have to take $20 million in salary cap back.
Yeah.
Think about that. You have to match the salary on that.
I don't know.
What are you
I'm not really sure what Jeremy was talking about there. I just thought it was funny. And also disrespectful to Zach LaVine. Come on, guys. He is not the monster that so many Bulls fans think he is. He's actually on a pretty team-friendly contract, all things considered, right now.
He's not the enemy.
We should be worried about how Zach LaVine is like in a deep state of depression with how bad these Bulls are right now. That should be our concern.
Enemy.
Not swapping Zach LaVine for a number six pick in a weak draft class. Come on now, guys.
Let's not be the fan base that makes every one of our players the enemy. That's all I'll ask, you know? I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Drop us your text, your voicemails. We've got through almost every single one. There's a lot of repeaters. A lot of you ask the same question, so we thank you for doing that, and we try to touch on all of them and, you know, give it some quality time, too. So thank you for doing that. 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us. You want to react to anything we've talked about in the last few days. We'll get to as many as we can. We usually do mailbag every Wednesday, but there's important questions, news that goes on. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we're going to dedicate as much time as we can to trade deadline stuff. So, you know, you got ideas of fixing the Bulls, how you can. Drop us your trade machine questions. Anything you got for us. We'd love to hear from you. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.